It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 419. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show. Facebook, send me a friend request or follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. And the reason you want to follow me, if I'm going to do a surprise show or if I'm going to be a guest on another show, which happened this past Friday night, we recorded live Pod Nuts with Steve Cherubino. He asked me to be a guest, and it's already posted at podnuts.com. So go check it out. I spent an hour talking with Steve on tips on consulting and all kinds of just great info that you will want to hear, and some one-of-a-kind things that I talked about that I've never discussed. So go over to Pod Nuts and give a listen to that. The wiki, which has been updated, and a big thank you to Barb Citizen X for taking care of that and managing that. I really appreciate it. And that's at MTS Wiki. So MTSWIKI.com. There you will find links to all of the past shows, links to the audio, links to the show notes. Go over and check that out. Reminder and a little admin note, this week we were unable to record Tech Vets. And I know if you were following, we said that the following week, because I'm going to be away the beginning of the week, we wouldn't be able to record. But I am going to be available on Wednesday night, and so is Carrie. So this week we couldn't record, but definitely on Wednesday the 15th, look for tweets and Facebook. I'm going to be updating everybody. We'll be recording at 8 o'clock Eastern time, so stop on by, check us out live, or check the audio out, and of course you can get that at tech-vets.com. I got a jam-packed show, lots of stories from the trenches involving email and Exchange Server. Definitely lead off with that. Want to talk about last Friday, my website outage, and the story behind that. Before we get started, I want to thank Instant House Call for being a sponsor of the Mike Tech Show. And Instant House Call is remote software that allows you to take over someone's machine and have complete control. You can reboot the system remotely, even into safe mode. It is a technician's dream software. This week, I had to remote into two systems as I was solving someone's peer-to-peer sharing problem, but I needed to be in both systems at the same time. Both of them had dual monitors, and it handles dual monitors phenomenally, where both monitors, it is seamless, where you can just scroll back and forth, and it's like being on one monitor, yet at the other end, there's two. You can try Instant House Call free for 15 days. You can click on the link on the left-hand side of the website, or just go to instanthousecall.com, download the trial, enter Mike Tech Show, and you'll get 15 days. Go try it out. Kick the tires. Give it a try, and I know you will be back to buy it. The first email story is about a utility that I used to recover mail from a client that thought he lost the mail. Now, they have an Exchange Server, and I get a panic email that my email's gone. It's deleted from the inbox. Is there a way we can recover? Now, The server's backed up by Shadow Protect, but you got to do a full restore for Exchange Server in order to get the mail recovery, because it doesn't do it by inbox. It does it with the whole information store. So that's a lot of work. So when we're going to when we're going about a restore for email, we want to look for other ways first. The first obvious thing, when you have an Exchange Server and you have Outlook Client, you go to Tools and you look to recover deleted messages. That's the first thing. No messages there. I looked at deleted items. They're not there. The biggest problem I find is someone dragging and dropping a folder into another folder or another subfolder. So I remote it in with Instant House Call, and I'm now looking at my client's Outlook, and I'm on the phone with him, and he can see what I see, and we're discussing and going through all of the different folder layers, and it's nowhere to be found. Something I noticed, though, he was having trouble sending and receiving messages, too. I believe the OST file was corrupt. What I did, and wherever he dragged the messages to, I created a new profile. That means a new local temporary folder, that offline storage folder, that OST file, a new one is created when you create a new profile. So I did that, and now we need a way to look at that other OST file. Now, in the past, I've gotten emails from people asking, how can you read or convert mail from an OST file to a PST? Well, this is what saved the day, and it's a free utility, and I'll have a link to the CNET download page, and it's called Outlook Recovery Toolbox. When you download it and start to run it, you can search for all OSTs. You can even search for PSTs, too. So I searched for all OSTs, and I seen there were two, and I seen the original one, which was Outlook.ost, and then there was another one, Outlook0.ost. Now, I knew the zero was the new one because I looked at that in the profile in the data file section. So the other one, it took, oh, maybe 5 or 10 minutes to read the file, and you just keep clicking next, and you say, you know, begin recovery. We seen where his messages were, where we couldn't see it in Outlook by itself. We were able to see it in this recovery tool. We were able to export it all to a PST. We mounted that PST. He was able to drag and drop his messages back. Problem solved. And I didn't have to go through an entire Exchange information store recovery, which we want to avoid if possible, because that would have been a lot of hours, a lot of work, very costly. I definitely ran that by my client. They were prepared for doing that, and that would have just meant a lot of work this weekend for me. In the long run, the client's happy, and we have a utility that I am happy to share with everybody, that if you run into this situation, give it a try. Any tool that we can find that might be able to help us recover something, add it to our toolbox. It's one of those utilities that you should have working with email. Speaking of that, different client. Today, I get an email saying, Mike, I'm trying to send messages and not all are getting through. Some are getting through, some are not. And I'm getting an undeliverable message. Now, when I look at the undeliverable, a lot of clues are in there. You get the error message, you get everything. So let's back up for a second, though. When I have a client with an Exchange Server and they're having problems, I want to log in, and I logged in and I took a look at their queues. There were over 6,000 queues. When I opened up the System Manager, this is an Exchange 2003 server, and then I open up to server, to queues, there were 6,000. It took a minute or two to populate. In order to remove all of them, there's only one real method, and I forgot where the directory was, and I wasn't sure if this should be the course of action. So I called my friend, Winston Wolf, who is at a client tonight. He can't join us live. Winston was in a meeting, so he couldn't answer his phone, so we texted back and forth. in one of his text messages, he said, Mike, you just really got to stop all of the services, which I knew, and then we got to go to the directory that has all of the Q mail files and just move them to another directory just for precautionary, and then make sure that that's empty, and then bring it back up. If you ever have to do this, there's lots of services first that you got to stop. Because first you would think, well, let's just stop all of the exchange services. I did that, and I went to the directory /programfiles.exch server, so the exchange server. Then there's a mail root directory. Then there's a VSI 1 directory. That's for the virtual SMTP server. And then under that, there's Q. That's Q-U-E-U-E. When I enter that directory, that's where the thousands and thousands of email messages that are trying to get out. Now, where are they coming from? Well, clearly it's spam. So somebody's system is infected. So we got a lot going on here. I first want to delete the Q, but at the same time, we got to find out where this infection is and we got to get it cleaned. And the first thing I can think of is everybody, there's 7 people, let's stop and close Outlook, everybody, and let's get Malwarebytes running on all 7 systems. So I talked to one of the attorneys who's more tech savvy than everybody else. He's one of the partners, and I'm doing this all remotely. Now I'm on the cell phone with him, and I said, you download Malwarebytes. And then I thought for a second, I said, wait, I'll download it to one of the shared directories on the server since I'm on the server. So I downloaded Malwarebytes. I made sure it was in the area that everybody's mapped to for a common shared area. And I said, go to everybody's system, launch and install the free version of Malwarebytes, do a full scan, and then when it's done, remove everything that it tells you that's bad and reboot. While he's doing that, I'm now trying to delete all of the Q messages that have stored up. And I go in and I can't delete everything. It says there's still files open. Now, remember, I stopped all the exchange services. That's not enough. And all of a sudden, it dawned on me, to stop the IIS admin service, you also have to stop HTTP SSL. You have to stop the GFI POP2 EXE service. You have to stop the SMTP service and the WWW service because there are a website that you have for Outlook web access. So you have to stop the publishing service. So all those services stopped and I was able to delete. And that's after I, of course, copied that directory. I was able to delete the thousands of messages that were there. But I would not start up any of the services until I knew all the systems were clean. So it took about an hour and a half. There were infections on almost all the computers. And I said, we'll take care of this later, you know, because he says, what should we do for a more permanent solution? And I said, well, buy 7 licenses of Malwarebytes, the pro version. And he did, and he sent me an email with the serial numbers, and I said, I'll remote in, and I'll activate them on each of the systems tonight. So after I'm done recording the show, that's what I got to do. I got to go in there and activate all of them on the 7 workstations. But we're not done yet. Once I start up all the services and get email flowing, and I'm sending email back and forth to my client, a few minutes later, the phone rings. Remember the initial problem where the email was stopped? We didn't really get to the core solution of everything. All we did was stopped wherever the spam was that was sending, whatever the infection was from a workstation, sending the messages to the server. We've cleaned out the server, but they are now on a blacklist. The IP address for their webs, for that they have, the static IP address for them at the site provided by Comcast, they're now put on a blacklist where their email is being blocked by certain services because email was still getting rejected to a couple clients that he was sending a message to. So how did I discover this? And this is something I've talked about over and over. MXToolbox.com. It's a required site for anybody that's having any kind of a problem. I typed in that IP address and it listed the three services. There's 35 services, but they were blacklisted on three services. One of them was Barracuda. You follow the links to anything that's blacklisted. After you type in the IP address, then there's a command, okay, find if they're on a blacklist. I get the list. I find the three. Follow the links and follow the instructions on getting that IP address removed from the blacklist. Each service has a procedure that's separate. So tonight, right before I started recording, I went in and you kind of have to beg by some of them where you put a message and you say, well, there was a system that was infected. It's now all cleaned and you swear on a Bible that everything's fine and that, you know, the site's good and they will remove your IP address. But be careful. If you did not correct the root cause and they put you back on, it could be very tough getting off that list. You don't want to start that removal process if you didn't solve the problem. So now I'm hoping that we solved the problem because Malwarebytes ran, everything is clean, and we're hoping we caught the infection that was sending messages to the Exchange server and having it go out. Now, at the router, I'm blocking SMTP from all systems other than the server. So I have that locked down pretty good. Whatever this infection was, it was sending messages through the regular SMTP connector of Exchange. Hopefully now this has all been corrected, and I just wanted to share all of the steps that had to take place in order to get this resolved. It can get pretty complicated. At first, it's like, wow, is it an Exchange server problem? And no, there was no software, no server problem. The whole root cause is some malware sending out spam and then them being placed on a blacklist. This brings up an email that I got this week from Barry Murphy, who has a similar problem. They were being blacklisted for their email, and they have a hosted solution. I said, that's ridiculous. I said, if your hosted email is not protecting you from being on blacklist, you got to change your hosting provider. So I wrote back Barry and told him what he's got to do. I put his domain in the MX Toolbox, seeing that he was on that they were on blacklists. They're not even hosting their email. I said, you have to call your hosting provider right away and complain. And then immediately start going and finding another provider. If you don't host your own email server and you find that you're in this situation, you got to get to a different hosting provider because they should not be on any blacklist. That means they have an open relay. They're not doing everything they can to protect you and to protect you from being placed on any kind of a blacklist. That's their job. That means the hosting provider just a big fail and you want to change providers. So that was the dialogue back and forth for Barry. And I wanted to bring that up because it's very interesting that now something similar happening to my client, but they happen to have an Exchange server. Want to discuss briefly last Friday's outage of MikeNation.net. I received a few emails from listeners and I couldn't get to it because I was so busy during the day and I was seeing mail on my iPhone that my website was down. And I was like, wow, okay, the minute I get home, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to get on the phone with GoDaddy because that's my hosting provider and I'm on shared hosting. And I call them and they tell me that they don't use the word denial of service attack happening, but there are things happening to another website that I'm on the same server with, and it may take a while to be corrected. I said, well, what's a while? And he said, well, they're going to send the request to have it escalated, and it could take 72 hours. I said, 72 hours? I can't be down for 72 hours. So I'm kind of burning and getting upset. To GoDaddy's credit, they see that I'm on the legacy hosting, where it's not their, quote, 4G, and their hosting that, you know, it's multiple servers behind the scenes for the website. I don't know if it's called grid hosting, but they call it 4G. They want to move me, and they said, if they move me, it's absolutely going to fix the problem, but it could take a while before I would be able to post to the website. And I'm like, I got a Mike Tech show to edit from Thursday night, and I got to post this up. I'm not real happy with this outage, and it could be up to 72 hours. I think that's their answer for everything. You know, it could be 72 hours, you could be down. I was very fortunate because only an hour, and a lot of you noticed I Facebooked and tweeted this, and I was up and running. So they actually took care of this fairly quickly and fixed this. And I'm very happy that they did. And I guess that's the bottom line. I know I've killed GoDaddy because I've had issues and I've had a fight, but on this one, they did resolve it quickly. My system seems faster. Performance is better. I am happier right now. A lot of you have recommended HostGator and said, Mike, you got to go to HostGator. And I'm like, well, I'm not ready to move yet. I re-upped not too long ago, but I'll keep that in the back of my mind. But here's the lesson. If you have a problem with GoDaddy, tweet with the hashtag GoDaddy, so pound GoDaddy, and put that in the tweet, because GoDaddy's watching, and I got direct messages in response, and they're now following me, and I'm following them, so it was great. I had some tweets back and forth with GoDaddy about the issue. I don't know if that was happening at the same time that I tweeted. Did they investigate what was happening and push to have that happen a little faster? I was so upset. I actually called Todd Cochran, host of Geek News Central, because he is a huge GoDaddy user, and they are a big sponsor of his podcast from the beginning. I think that was one of the first podcasts that GoDaddy ever advertised on. So I literally left Todd a voicemail on his cell phone. That's how upset I was about what was happening with GoDaddy. I mean, I was going to use everything under the sun. If I could, whatever I could use and to get this resolved, I was going to use that at my disposal. I was not going to be stopped. So I was very glad that was all resolved and it's a happy ending. I want to thank all of you, for everybody who was retweeting it and responding and helping me out with the problem. I really, really appreciate it. Boy, it's hot. And it's hot here in the Northeast Quadrant. And you know it's summer. And with summer, I'm going away for a few days. Everybody wants to go away. But business keeps going on. And you have to find a way to meet. And the best way to meet is GoToMeeting. And to be able to see everybody and use the HD Faces feature, there's nothing like it. To be able to hold unlimited meetings, to be able to simulate like you're sitting around a conference room and seeing everybody with the HD Faces and making that connection, where before in the old days you couldn't make that connection. Well, now you can, and that's a great feature. GoToMeeting is one of the best services for any online meetings. They support the iPhone, the iPad, all of your portable devices. One click and you connect. It's perfect. You got to try it now for 30 days. And you can do that by going to GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and enter the promo code podcast. So you go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, enter the promo code podcast, and you get to use an incredible service and try it out for 30 days for free. Give it a try. All right, let's get to some email here. This is from Nancy, and its title is Hardware Question. I have an HP EliteBook 2540P. It has a Core i5 processor, and it runs Windows 7. It recently failed on me, and the hard drive is not the issue. I can sometimes get partway into a boot, but mostly I'm getting non-system disk or disk error. The BIOS often doesn't see a hard drive. Now, how do we know that the hard drive is good or bad? I don't know. That's right. Let's keep going here. I have tested the notebook with other drives and get either the same results or similar. Ooh. Whether it looks like it would point to a failed hard drive, but then if I take things out and put them back together, I can get it to boot. The drive is good. I'm almost positive, and I'm getting all the data off just in case. Online backups are not an option for me because of data caps, so I do hard drive backups. That's great, and you're approaching it the right way. If you even hint that there's a problem, get the data off, and you should be backing up anyway, but get your data. My question is this. This notebook is out of production and has been for a couple of years. Is it worth fixing? If I do the work myself, I guess it would have to be a full system board, because what I think is that the hard drive controller has failed or is failing. And is my assessment fairly accurate? I have enjoyed this notebook, but I'm not married to it, and I'm not willing yet to buy another one. But I think I understand the short production cycle of this model. It's only a few years old. Thanks for a great show. Nancy, first, you got to guarantee that the hard drive is good. And there's an incredible utility, and it's called Crystal Disk Info. And if you go, I like the portable version, so go to portableapps.com and download the portable version, run it. Now, take your hard drive, and since you can take it out, put it in a docking station or a docking cable, a cable that can convert the SATA to USB. Then run that utility, and let's see if the drive is good. And for that matter, any drive that you're sticking into this machine, make sure that you know the drive comes up good. You get that nice blue light. If it comes up yellow, if it comes up red, we know the drive is bad. But if you've taken a brand new drive and you've placed it in the system, and since you have a backup of it, do a fresh, clean install of Windows 7. Do a whole fresh install and see what happens. But you're right. You're on your assessment. If the hard drive is good and you've done a fresh install of the operating system and you're still having trouble, so you've removed the operating system as a possibility, you remove the hard drive, then you're left with the controller. If it's more than 3 years old, my rule of thumb is that's it. You're done. Just trash it. Go on. Get another system. Unless you can get on eBay, get a trusted seller that you can get the exact motherboard. Maybe someone else has a different problem with a system and they've put it up for sale and you can get one. So if you can scrounge around on your own and get a replacement motherboard, then yes, you know, go ahead, go for it. That's a lot of work on a laptop. For me, when it comes to that level and that kind of a problem, I'm ready to move on to another laptop, or I will counsel a client, let's retire that. It's time to get a new laptop if it's a few years old. It's not worth the money and the time and the expense. But if you're willing to invest the time, you're going to have to search around for an inexpensive replacement motherboard. This is from Brandon. He says, Mike, today I had a coworker that asked me to look at his computer because he was getting popover ads. He ran Malwarebytes and found a couple things, and it did not help. I used D7 to troubleshoot, and everything looked okay, even the host file. I ran Hijack This and found four entries that should not be there. I opened the host file in Notepad, and everything looked fine. There were only two entries that should have been there. I then browsed to the host file location, and this is when I noticed things did not look right. The name of the host file was host.txt. Usually it does not have an extension. I also noticed a file called host.new. That was 2 kilobytes. at first, it looked normal, but then I noticed that I could scroll down toward the bottom where the four entries that hijacked this found. I tried to delete the host.new file, but permission was denied. I had to change the permissions, delete it, then rename the host.txt file to host without an extension. After this, the ads went away. Wow. That's a great tip, but you're right. That's a way that malware and spyware will infect the computer and take over where you're going to sites, and they can control what sites you're going to by changing. Instead of going to google.com, you're going to where they want you to go, and it's going to be a bad site. A host file is looked at before DNS. So when you go to your browser and you type an IP address or you type the name of a site, very quickly, the host file's checked, and if there's anything in there, it obeys that first before it goes out and actually makes a query to a DNS server and then says, oh, I'm supposed to go to this IP address. And maybe the DNS server is from your internet service provider, whether it be Comcast or Verizon or whoever. Maybe it's Google. You know, I often use Google 8.8.8.8 or OpenDNS. That's a great DNS to help block phishing sites that are false. Host file, very important and sometimes overlooked in our diagnosing what's wrong with a particular computer. Always know where the location of that host file is. Go to it, check it out, make sure there's no false entries. This is a great tip, Brandon, so thank you for that email. This is from H. Young. A couple quick comments, and he's referencing to show 417. In this show, you talked about a Dell Inspiron laptop being hard to open and not being able to install Mountain Lion on a Mac. They seem like they are similar issues. The Dell Inspiron is a budget PC, so you get what you pay for. They don't spend the extra money making it convenient, and they probably assume you'll buy another one when it stops working. The Mac, I'm guessing they are figuring out they have to force people into upgrades. Oh yeah, absolutely. They have the same problem cell phone companies have. The hardware isn't getting a lot better every year, so they can't count on you're just upgrading every year because you're a fanboy. They have to force you to upgrade by making your computer not be able to use the newest features. Too bad they don't emulate PC pricing, though. I might try to get one if they did. I'd buy a $300 MacBook to replace my $300 Acer laptop. I'm sure you would, and so would everybody. Thank you for the email. You're dead on about that Inspiron, and it's the Inspiron N5050. It was the most difficult hard drive that I had to try to get out to recover data from any laptop. I've never had that many screws and had to literally disassemble the entire laptop and remove the keyboard and all sorts of things. There were 13 screws in the bottom. It was painful, and I was able to do it, and I discussed that a couple weeks ago. But that is a laptop to avoid. If you're buying Dell laptops, please buy the Latitude. It's a much better laptop. It's from Blaine. Power protection. Mike, I love the shows and have for years. Keep up the good work. My personal home protection is as follows. In a breaker box, a Delta LA 302R surge arrestor, along with a Delta CA 302R surge capacitor. Detailed Delta information on their surge products here, and I'll have a link. On my main PC, I use a CyberPower CP1350 AVR LCD and a CP1500 AVR LCD on my LCD TV and DVR. The CyberPower units aren't so much for their surge protection, but rather brown out and black out backup the AVR models offer. I always make sure and use your Amazon link when purchasing from here. Every little bit counts. Oh, happy trails. Blaine from Indiana. Blaine, thank you so much. And speaking of Amazon, it is back to school time. So do not forget to use my Amazon link for buying all your back to school supplies. And if you know anybody that needs supplies, maybe they need that laptop for their child or their niece or nephew or someone that's going back to school, use amazon.mikenation.net or miketechshow.com/Amazon or the Amazon link on the website. I want to thank everybody for using my link, and I expect the last half of August to be used a lot for everybody as you check the prices on Amazon for all your supplies for back to school. That should be your primary place for purchasing. So this way you don't have to go fight registers and crowds in Target and Barnes & Noble or wherever your Staples, all the places that you're going for books or supplies. Buy it from the convenience of your house online. Use my link and it helps support the show. I really appreciate it. This email's from Mark and is me, Claudius, in the chat. And he says, Mike, a client of mine is experiencing remote desktop connection issues on their laptop using Windows 7 using a VPN to remote in. It had worked pretty well for the prior 3 years, but this month it has been problematic. I tried to do some root cause analysis to determine what changed, but it's pretty difficult to tell. The desktop they are trying to remote into is supported by another IT support person. All I can tell you is there were server issues last month that were fixed, and my client also switched from Comcast to Fios about the time at home. The symptom is the following message. Clicking the VPN icon, it says connected as normal, but clicking the remote desktop icon after about 15 seconds says remote desktop can't find the computer named, you know, XXX. This means that XXX does not belong to the specified network. Verify the computer name and domain you are trying to connect to. Now, whenever you're on a VPN and you can't connect, or you can't find your destination, the first thing I'm thinking of is, what IP address are you getting when you connect? Now, there's service provider changes here, and you said there was a server issue. Are they issuing the right subnets so you are properly on the network and navigating that network? That's the first thing that I'd want to make sure that verify what IP address they're going. What is the IP address of the network and the destination machine that you're trying to get a connect to or have access to? We took the laptop to my shop, which is Comcast, and get the same results. So I'm guessing it is not Fios related and the RDP port is open. They said at my shop, I was able to connect successfully about 1 in 12 times and get a log on screen and can get in instead of that message. So it is probably not a laptop configuration issue. Once in, I verified the remote desktop computer's name was not changed. Any suggestions where to start? Thanks for all you do, Mark. I'm still wondering where you get the IP address. And are you getting consistently the times that you connect correctly? Are you getting an IP address that is correct, and the times that you aren't, maybe it's coming from somewhere else. Something's not configured right in the networking piece that is giving you your credentials for connecting in, your IP address and so forth. I don't know. That's the first thing I'm thinking of. Then, when in doubt, look to DNS. Whenever you have a network issue on a corporate network or any kind of a problem, I look to DNS. Is the suffix being applied correctly? Are all of the DNS settings correct? And here's where it's going to be really tough, Mark. You don't have control over the host network. So all you can do is ask how things are configured with the DNS and do a DNS lookup, as Day2SV in the chat is saying. I always, when there's any kind of a domain problem or issue, the culprit is somewheres with the DNS not configured correctly. Those entries not made properly, or DNS not being set up correctly with Active Directory integrated. Do we know what server we're talking about? What is the VPN client? Is it Cisco? Is it Mark? If you could get a few more details, and then let's see, there might be tools within the VPN client that you can use to help test what's going on. I'm trying to think what else. If you got any suggestions for me to pass on to Mark, let me know. Send me an email, miketechshow@gmail.com, and I will pass them on to Mark and discuss them in a future show. We have one last tip here, and this was great. It was sent today by Patrick Boyle, and I remember talking about this a while ago. It is God mode for a tweak for Windows 7. And he says, I'm not sure if you all know about this or not, but it would come in handy. Here is a way to create God mode. And basically, you create a new folder on your desktop and you rename the folder to God mode dot. And then there's a very long set of characters that I will put in the show notes. When you're done, open the folder and it changes its icon, and you will now, as he says, bask in all of your control panel power. And I played with this when a while ago when I first read about this God mode. And it's basically a folder with not only everything in your control panel, but there's lots of other little goodies in there. I did this on my other system, but I haven't invoked it since I redid my computer and added an SD drive. That's something that I'll have to give another try. Little Windows tip, something to play with. If you have to transfer any kind of information from one system to another, backing up all the settings, backing up the data files, the best program is FABS Auto Backup for Tech. You know, I talk about it all the time. And the reason why I mention this is the offer ends on October 31st. But if you use the code GD, as in David, R as in Richard, W as in White, K as in King, K as in King. So that's GDRWKK. You will get 40% off. That's an incredible offer that Fab has passed on to me to let all my listeners know. Give that a try. I'll have a link for the Fab's Auto Backup for Tech with that code. So take advantage of that, because that'll end at the end of this month. And that's a utility I cannot live without. I use it weekly. There is some client or somebody that's, I got to back up everything, or moving somebody from one system to another, moving from XP to Windows 7, but you got to place all those files in the correct location. Man, that's it. That is the utility to use. We do not have any music for tonight. We got to all the email. I got to all the stories. I want to thank everybody for supporting the show, downloading and staying subscribed to the show. Remember to check out Tech Vets. Remember to check out Podnuts if you can. Support the sponsors, Instant House Call, GoToMeeting, my Amazon link, and Fab's Auto Backup for Tech. That's it. I'll see everybody next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.